guys, members, thank you very much for joining us. It's great to have you here. We are continuing our very interesting conversation with Dominic Orbeck about the system of reptilian marketing, pretty much. And we are going to dive into the heart-brain model here in the next segment and talk about this from a more positive point of view and kind of the countermeasure, so to speak, here to the negative side of reptilian marketing. Again, the website I can give out is heartbrain.net. Head on over there, check it out. And what we can begin to talk about, I guess, Dominic, is the most simplest question of all. And you can define a little bit for us what the heart brain is. You talked in the first segment about this neurological connection between the heart and the brain, and that we should actually think of it considered to be one thing instead of two separate things. Tell us about it, Dominic.
Sure. One thing we didn't touch on in the last segment was the effects of reptilian marketing. And since we have a baseline of saying that this neurological heart-brain connection is a fact, we can look at the damages, literal damages, biological damages that reptilian marketing does. And I simply make the claim that when anyone is receiving these reptilian messages, it automatically puts you in a state of stress, and you are cut off literally from your heart's intelligence. So in that sense, the heart-brain model is simply asking or compelling or teaching human beings to be aware of the circuit, exercise the circuit, and the results hopefully are that people become immune or very cognitive of the tactics. But it's really about the most profound basic insights of a way of living or a way of being. It totally relates to spiritual concepts of a modality of interacting with your environment. So
very, very interesting. And how do we exercise this circuit then?
Well, for one, I have the opinion that it is a fairly new evolutionary circuit. Based on my own research, I'm not going to say this is an expert opinion, but the nice thing about marketing is you can move ahead and claim things just because things aren't 100% accurate doesn't mean it's not necessarily true or that you can't move forward. So if there's enough margin of error or if there's enough accuracy within an order of magnitude, you can go ahead and make your claim. Or go ahead and do your model or your strategy. So in that sense, I think the heart circuit is fairly new when you look at the history of the prefrontal lobe, for example. And I think I learned this through Joseph Chilton Pierce, just referencing other people's stuff. But it's fairly new in that it's a few thousand years old. Maybe between 50 and 20,000 years. So. Right in between there is about 35,000 years.
Sorry to cut you off, but I was going to mention then that's from a evolutionary type of view, if we hold that view. It's very recent, and it's something that we might not have begun fully utilized then, I guess you're saying, and that this could be consciously encouraged, so to speak, if we... Well, let me phrase it this way into a question instead. Do you think that it will be... If we're conscious of it and aware of it, do you think that will utilize it better? Will that kind of train it as any other muscle in the body, pretty much?
Yes. And I had the fortune of working with people in emotional literacy and trying to develop programs, because there's a huge problem in, say, schools who are dealing with stressed out children and lower state standards scores. They're basically cooking the books. We're always improving. Well, if we're always improving, how come the school systems are, constantly in stress mode?
That's right.
So there's a new trend to get kids, emotionally intelligent. And that's all a good trend. But that's where it's going. Dr. Goleman, I think, was a pioneer in that. In that field, the writing about emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
So, repeat the question one more time?
Well, just in regards to if you think that considering the recent discovery or however this the connection here popped up, so to speak, between the heart and the brain, this neurological connection. So the question was, do you think that it can be improved by simply being aware of it, or can we train it in some way, just like any other muscle in the body?
Oh, yes, yes, and yeah, sure, absolutely. So, yeah, it's really about, I guess that's why I went down the road I was on, because people are starting to develop programs. You know, it's like, well, how do we make this a programmatic offering? Because it's, you know, first you have the, you know, the education and the research. People understand it's true. And then you tackle, you know, individual problems, family problems, organization problems, institution problems.
Mm-hmm.
In that sense, it's like, so you come up with a very simple model, but the complexity lies in the scale of its application, you know, from the smallest to the largest, the individual and the collective. So, you know,
yes,
you do exercise these circuits. You do exercise them, and I tested out. I saw your Dr. Horowitz interview about vibrational frequencies.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have been working with other groups, trying to incorporate the self-physio, I think it's called, frequencies. And so, of course, I tested out on my 7-year-old, my youngest, and he sat there for 5 minutes listening to it.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, you might be able to exercise it even faster. Because in schools, for example, they just don't have the time. And so even programs where the kids have to write out their own thoughts and stuff, and it takes, you know, 15 minutes, that's too much time.
Hmm.
But I just have a wild hair of an idea of, like, well, what if kids came into their classroom with those frequencies while they were getting ready for school? I mean, that would just do it right there.
Hmm. Well, I mean, for instance, we even talked about like architecture on this program a lot, and from the point of view that certain houses are, you know, just better in nature, because the structure that they in that they actually harness, well, all buildings and everything pretty much carries a frequency of its own. So even a school that is architecturally, you know, wisely designed, so to speak, will carry a frequency of its own, instead of going into these, many cases, institutionalized type of buildings, schools that can be very boring environment. And I don't even think that basic things as that actually will encourage, you know, growth and intelligence in a totally different way. Don't know what you think about that, Dominic.
Yeah, there's got to be some truth in that. And also related is the proof. Pictures do say 1,000 words here, but the fact how your heart emanates a magnetic field that's about, you know, 10 to 12 feet. Sorry to use my measuring system.
No worries.
You know, but it radiates. You have that toroid field of a vibrational field emanating from your heart. So you're walking around, you're always interacting with the folks in that manner.
Oh, that is interesting. And I've heard, this was quite a few years ago, that the heart actually has a higher microvolt, I think it is, output than the brain. Do you know if that's true or not?
Yes, that's true, and that's why the that field I was just discussing is the largest. It's the most, you know, when you're in a room and you're interacting on that subatomic level or whatever, that's what people are picking up on, because it's literally an intermingling of circles, fields.
Hmm.
And yeah, the heart does have the largest one. It's not coming from your mind.
That is very, very interesting. What do you think that means? Do you think it, because again, you mentioned, for instance, emotional intelligence before that, Donald Goldman, as you said, first wrote about this idea about emotional intelligence. But do you think that that's just another way of, you know, measuring intelligence as well, but they haven't begun looking into that yet? Or again, I guess it's not from the point of view of the controllers and the top elite that want to have this kind of reptilian hierarchy thing going, pretty much, that it hasn't been incorporated into the school system and the institutions, because that would actually free people up much more. That would actually make them, you know, emotionally more intelligent? Or what do you think?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question because who was the gentleman who had the common purpose?
That was Brian Gerrish.
Yeah. So if you have a pro, like I know the UK has a problem, a societal problem with say this disaffected youth, which is another term for teens running around not being productive members of society or whatnot. You have crime, you have dropouts, etc. So they want to address that as a society and they're integrating emotionally intelligence and social intelligence programs. So the reason I brought up Mr. Gerrish is because, well, who knows? I'm just speculating, but who knows if they want that to be successful or not? I don't know.
Do you mean common purpose, or are you talking about incorporating like emotional intelligence in schools, or what do you mean?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's like a, if there is a movement to break down existing civilization institutions,
yes.
Why should they want to see people be successful in that way?
Exactly, I got you.
If they don't want to employ people in a local neighborhood because they'll have more control, if the system's broken, why fix it?
Yeah, exactly.
So I would just mention that as an interesting trend to observe.
Yes.
See what's happening in that regard.
And so while everything around us pretty much in that sense is falling to pieces, and that could be either by design then, which I do believe it is in many cases, but maybe not all the time, because some of it is also a reflection of the fact that we're working with outdated models like the reptilian model pretty much and the hierarchical structure of society. And I think that at this time, that's not what is encouraged by the higher forces, God, nature, call it whatever you want to call it. But to me, it feels like it's breaking down because it's time for us now to act. And as you say, in one sense, begin to rethink a little bit on how we want, the world to be run pretty much. And it's important that we individually kind of rise up, take that responsibility. And this is an interesting model then to describe and to talk about.
Yes, and it starts with parenting too. I mean,
of course.
You can't have the schools or institutions, force it. They can make programs. You can try things programmatically, but it really impacts the parent. It really impacts what it means to be a father. And I think that's across all cultures. That's still that needs some healing. Just like Ms. Neil Kramer there was talking about this, the divine feminine or the feminine energy.
Yes.
Fathers need to be good mothers in that sense, so to speak, and they need to pay attention to their kids in that emotional way. Now, to go back, though, emotional intelligence was originally just the simple observation that the smartest person by IQ was not the most successful person in society.
That's right.
And so they did a lot of research about success. So it wasn't really about anything except trying to crack the code for success. And so they realized that, oh, these people are resilient, they're productive, they handle defeat well, or they interact with their fellows in a manner that's cooperative or friendly or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
People skills. So that's why the model is not, that's why, again, the heart-brain model is innovative, because if you look at things from a success or a winning perspective, that is not necessarily sustainability. And so whether things are corrupt on purpose or not, we do have problems on a global scale related to pollution and population control, all sorts of things that are stressing the system.
Yeah.
And so sustainability is absolutely in the cultural vernacular. Everyone's trying to find that code. And so the heart-brain model is that simple win-win scenario. And so I make the outrageous claim that we will not be sustainable without heart-brain input. So as if any marketer or people are developing a system or a model, it absolutely has to have a heart-brain input, a heart-based input and intent that model to be successful.
And is there something you can say about that? How would such a thing be implemented or incorporated? Is there anything more you can tell us about that?
Yeah, and that's where it's just new. It's and that's where I think it's relevant that I'm talking on this show, because I think the people on your programs are coming from that perspective. They're trying to provide the audience insights into what a heart-brain input is. So I would say on a macro level, people listening to this show are learning what heart-brain inputs might be. Now, I'm just saying they're heart-brain inputs, but it's a synonym game. It's
exactly.
You come up with your own word.
Yes.
But you get my drift.
Yes. So that's interesting. No. Oh, yeah, sorry. Go ahead. Continue.
Oh, so the rest is just it's application. It's doing it. It's implementing it. This is why it's so new, because the truth seekers who see this pattern of devolution and a systematic breakdown, you know, it's as easy as seeing the money supply by a central bank.
Yes.
Screwing it up, on purpose, almost, in controlling ways.
Yeah.
So they're certainly not coming from a heart, brain model. So anyway, it's about sustaining civilization, preserving what's worth preserving, taking what's good and true and beautiful and keeping that, fighting for it or whatnot,
Yeah. So what do you think in regards to, the environmental issue? You mentioned that, for instance, before, pollution and what have you. I mean, we have absolutely a lot of, corporations doing damage to the planet. But what I also see happening at the same time is that individual human beings are kind of being targeted as the boogeyman. And I think that actually contributes to more stress, also a lot of fear, because it's actually changing the relationship that we have with this planet. It's changing it to the perception that we are when we're on this planet, we are contributing to that system all the time. And we are, how should I phrase it? Like we're a burden almost on Mother Earth, if you know what I mean. And that's the imprint that they're trying to give us. That's the meme. And I think that's a very detrimental. What do you think about that? And can that be shifted in some way? We shouldn't look at it from the point of view maybe that we are that we're a burden on the planet, but we can consciously change our ways, obviously. But it still, to me, is a very fear-based way of telling us. What do you think about the whole environmental movement and the way that they're giving out their messages right now, Dominic?
Yes, and that's what I mentioned in the earlier program, why it's disingenuous. You can't have corporations telling you reptilian-coded messages and then blame you for being shut off from your heart.
Exactly.
That's just that's wrong, and that's where people can push back. And then the flip side of that, the positive side of that, is to know and trust that we do have enough resources. We need to go there sustainably, but to say that there's this lack of supply or this lack of resources on a planetary scale, again, is a lie.
Yes.
And so if you understand that we have enough resources, it's just getting there. It's just putting in the models, or it's just doing it, willing it or creating it together. That's where the peace movement comes from or whatever. But that, I think my points wasn't that clear, but it came across.
What I wanted to say as well to people who might want to check out that movie that I mentioned in the first hour, Home or whatever it's called, they had one interesting point that we're talking about water, for instance, and this idea that they tried to portray the idea that water is running out, that we lack water all the time, and sending that message, which is obviously not true, because it's a cycle as everything else. Water does not disappear from the planet. It's here, and it just, goes around in a circle. It doesn't, it might be in the form of water vapor or in the form of ice or, regular flowing water, fresh water, what have you, but it doesn't actually disappear, and so it's all about manipulating our perception of reality and our relationship to the environment. So it's important that we get the right, again, kind of relationship to the earth. And as just as you say, don't get this idea of lack, I feel, you know?
Correct. And so that's a starting point. And then I think that's why it's also relevant to the memes of, say, abundance. Because, you know, who leads the market in abundance memes? It's the people that say you need to think and grow rich. You know, and that's disingenuous when the other side of it saying like, well, there's nothing, there's scarcity, there's lack.
Yeah.
And they're manipulating the laws and the markets. You know, nothing's further than the truth, it seems, than the saying that there's a free market, like it's free and fair. I don't want to go down that road. I'll get negative.
Well, that's okay. I mean, it needs to be pointed out, and I think you're making a good point that it isn't free. It's definitely being run by those who have the most money. That's how the system is being built that way. That those who have the most, the most amount of money, they can make more money. You know, that's the way that it's been structured, so that's unfortunate. So something needs to happen there. Something definitely needs to change, and people need to be aware where they put their money into, so to speak, and what corporations are getting at the end of the day, what have you. But I wanted to ask you a little bit about the HearthMath Institute as well. Maybe you can mention a little bit about Joseph Chilton Pierce that you mentioned before to us, for those who aren't aware of him, his work, or this institute.
Sure. They're indirectly related. He's not the institute itself, but he did reference it in some of his earlier works, like The Transcendence of Biology is where I learned about, you know, the basics from him.
Mm-hmm.
Now the HeartMath Institute has programs in place. They develop products and techniques. So they have things like certification programs for life coaches or education counselors or whatnot. And it's all about heart coherence. So optimizing your health, de-stressing, you know, all these are desired by people in the modern world. So they've come up with some great products based on their research. And they're implementing it across society. Now, what I'm interested in most of all, though, is their Global Coherence Initiative,
mm-hmm.
which is measuring the ionosphere and observing and correlating human vibrations and how it might affect or interact with the ionosphere. So there's research being conducted trying to see how we're connected. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, there might be a claim that our heart fields or a human field connects all the way up to the ionosphere. Now, I can't tell you much about that, but that just sounds interesting. And certainly things like Gaia theory or whatnot or Earth consciousness would start there in the ionosphere, apparently.
Really? That's interesting. So this is something more that people maybe can find out about on the HeartMath Institute website, do you think, or where can people go read more about this?
Well, sure. I guess I do have a link on my homepage about the Global Coherence Initiative, so they can easily find it there at heartbrain.net, and then they can explore.
Interesting. So let's see what we more can explore here, Dominic. Are there some areas that we have kind of neglected to mention in regards to your model? Where do you think that this will go in the future? How do you see this being developed and implemented and so forth?
Well, I think there's a concerted effort by Spirit to develop this circuit with us. So I think it's, you know, if anybody wants to understand what that is or synonyms, they can know this by, say, you know, I think Neil Kramer's interview there, End of the Fourth Age, is another way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Dr. Horowitz's Healing Vibrations is one way of looking at it. Lynn McTaggart's interview with the Intention Experiment is, I think, almost directly related.
Yes.
To that. And as a side note, it is interesting because you have someone like Alfred Weber, who has an exopolitical model and assumes that there are other intelligences here on the planet, etc., two types of government, a corporal universe government and a spiritual government, whereas Lynn McTaggart cited Dr. Persinger's work on the geomagnetic field, and that person is trying really hard to explain away claims like Alfred's making, that we're not alone and all that stuff. People are imagining these things in their head because the magnetosphere messes with your mind, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, it's just interesting to see the back and forth, just like crop circles. I mean, oh, it's ball lightning. Oh, it's people with planks. You know, they keep having to come up with new revised theories. But woe to you if you criticize their model.
Yeah, exactly.
But never mind that they were incorrect and had to totally revise their approach, 10 years later. Dr. Persinger, I think, got his start trying to explain away all the alien abduction hype that Bud Hopkins and Whitley Strieber started back in the 80s.
That's right. And this guy, Michael Persinger, he worked at the at the Laurentian University in Canada, and he does a lot of course, brain research, pretty much. And do you think that their work eventually will kind of is running down a route where they, well, it'll be kind of a cul-de-sac at the end, and they won't end up getting anywhere? Do you think that will be the case, or do you think that they will continually try to reevaluate their work in order to try to make it fit into the, what reality is, pretty much? Or where do you see their work going at this point?
I'd say that trend would continue. I mean, as soon as, because it certainly continues on the other side too. You know, people who believe in light workers and spirit and God and these fields of intelligence, or these circuits of intelligence that exude, personality qualities or co-creative relationships, that kind of deal, versus a materialistic worldview or a deterministic worldview that doesn't include God. And in that sense, reptilian marketing is very, very relevant to a movie like Zeitgeist.
Yeah.
Because you do have this division. I mean, it's very obvious that religion has been abused in a very reptilian way to control people. And so there's an understandable backlash against institutional religion and a resurgence of personal spirituality. But I think a movie like Zeitgeist is a gray area because it so powerfully discusses injustices of, say, 9/11 truth and central banking, but correlates that in the beginning with the religion that tends to throw the baby out with the bathwater. So if there's a so what's important is people receiving information for the first time, and so if someone who is not necessarily thinking about these things but might encounter it for the first time, thinks, oh yeah, that religion, that Jesus guy, he's bad, he's a fraud, and then they have to go through a learning experience that I don't know where I'm going with that, but mix that message with 9/11 is totally powerful. It's totally, but it's an indirect association. I don't understand why they had to associate those things.
Well,
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I just want to say I definitely see what you mean, and it's an interesting thought to raise, actually, and of course people have questioned Zeitgeist, the motives of that, if there's another agenda behind, if it's funded by this and that, and that could all be true, could all be the case here, but at the same time I do feel that this kind of awakening process, if you know what I mean, has to in some way take place. It cannot happen in a gentle kind of way, and in this case, I mean, that film has been watched by a lot of people, so obviously it's a powerful force, so to speak, but I also feel that it's good at the same time, because it pushes people against the wall and in a way forces people to look at all these different fields and actually begin questioning them. Then after that point, I feel it's the responsibility of the viewer to evaluate the information and for themselves ask, okay, is this right? Does it ring true for me? Do I need to do more research to this? Because as anything is, if you swallow it at face value, it's in some way it's going to not be beneficial to you. That's how I feel. But you think that there could be another motive behind Sitegeist, another agenda there, or what?
I think it's just I think what you said is true and totally correct and good in that it does shock people and wake people up, and that is a scaffolding that has to happen. It's an evolutionary development.
Yes.
And it's a reflection of the division that exists anyway. I mean, it was inherent that a movie like that would come along anyhow.
Yeah, exactly.
So you can't blame them.
Of course not. And what they've done again in the film is pretty much just they've taken, which is good, which is the way to do it, but they've taken a lot of other people's research and just kind of bunged it down in a 2-hour special in a way, and just, you know, Jordan Maxwell is in there. There's a lot of other, you know, thinkers talking in there. It's comedians, you know, George Carlin, what have you. And it just points out and references these questions, and so people can wake up to the fact that they expose a little bit of 9/11 in there. They have some stuff on religion, as you mentioned, which is, I think it's all good, and it all should be questioned. But then after that point, I guess the unfortunate turn it possibly can take is that if it has, it turns people into some kind of, total atheist, non-spiritual individual. But again, that's up to the viewer, right? That's up to the one who perceives the information to do with it as they please. Or do you think I'm not wrong there?
No, you're not wrong. I guess the only, my overall point would be that if someone's coming from that, they're more susceptible to a deterministic worldview, materialistic worldview that is prone to reptilian marketing tactics.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's interesting. It's a good point. And what would you say is kind of the I guess, if you will, the solution to that? Do you think that people can still turn to some spiritual information, or do you think that people who watch that for the first time or whatever will veer away from everything that after that point has to do with some kind of spirituality or higher purpose in life, or what do you think is the outcome of it?
Well, the outcome is inherent, and this is why it's fun to be a marketer in this sense, making outrageous claims, is that the heart brain always wins. Always it will win in all ways, but in that sense, truth. Truth is definitely an aspect of the heart circuit. And I'm just making, claims.
Yeah.
These aren't scientific, research studies. But in that sense, the truth always comes out. You can't hide it. And where does it live? Truth is a living, dynamic thing. And so in that sense, people coming from any space, if they're seeking the truth, it will always come out. It will always win. And if the truth is closely related to the heart, then that means we have a way. We now have a guide, a compass to getting towards sustainability, to getting towards truth. And so, in that sense, it's a the reason it always wins, or to say that it always wins, is that it's absolutely futile to try to control human beings.
Well, history has shown that, and hopefully will continue to do that, even though the tactics these days are different than they were, for instance, when the Roman Empire were around, where they have a lot more technology now, and they have other things to try to control people. But I definitely agree with you. I think that it doesn't matter what they put out against us, so to speak. To me, even the analogy of the Matrix films, to take that reference again, is even though they're in a completely controlled digital environment, there's still people there who actually manage to break free and break out of it, and that has to do with the intelligence that you have in one way, and also the nature of how you question reality. And I think that you mentioned something really interesting, which has to do with the truth, you know, that I guess you're saying that it's when it's alive, it means that it's not static in one way. Is it, do you think that it's evolving as well? Is it changing as well? Or what do you mean? What do you mean when you said that the truth is alive in that sense?
Yeah, in that sense, I mean, even the materialistic world has had to admit in their textbooks that, reality is not just our one-way view of perception. We interact with the environment, and it's like, wow, you know, come on, people. People understand that on an intuitive level. They don't need to read that in a book. It's not a huge insight. But in that sense, you know, it has to do with the branding or the values of what it means to be a co-creative being in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, what is important, before I forget, it also has to do with the way out of this, you know, this overall problem of architects of control, because I think the most wise people are saying what people don't want to hear, and that's, you know, the way out is showing mercy and love to the very people who detest you and control you.
That's a good point. And that's a difficult thing to do, obviously, especially if you're recently awakened, so to speak, if you're new into this, if you're just discovering, you know, the corruption of the bankers and all these people who are instigating the world government and what have you. And it's at that point, it's very, very difficult to see it from that point of view of love and mercy. You're going to be fucking pissed off at these people. You're going to want to, you know, get rid of them pretty much. And
yes.
And I think that that's a natural and very, very good response at the beginning, because in one sense you can ride a little bit on that anger, if you will. It's a good and actually productive energy in that, but it's also a trick not to let that control you too much, because in one way then you become a player in their game. That's how I view it at this point, at least. What do you think about that, Dominic?
Yeah, I would agree with that, you know, wholeheartedly. And you know, so this is where this is why it's so new, is because, you know, we can be creative with this. Like I said, I try it out with my youngest son or my youngest sons. And so from an early age, I tried to introduce the concept of a heart shield, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, taking how does a kid like it? You know, all human beings, we like to think we've got superpowers. You know, this might be a good way to introduce something to empower people. You know, you have a heart shield. You can exercise it and use your superhuman powers of love, compassion, mercy, truth, and you are willing to, you know, that provides the courage that's required to see through this, but also become agents of change. But creatively, if you do something like a heart shield,
mm-hmm.
you can reach out to all levels of intellect, age, and you know, personal philosophy.
How do you go about, like, for instance, you mentioned that you're telling this to your son or your child or something like that. How do you explain that, or how do you get someone to? Is it about visualization, or how do you perceive the heart shield, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, with the kid, they understand, especially with the boy, they understand a shield. You know, they're into Pokemon and all sorts of cartoon stuff, and they understand it. You know, superpowers and shields. And the reason it's critical to maybe talk about that is because a human being won't really truly accept it until they've experienced it personally. And so when I've had those awesome moments of, coherence with him, where we're totally in vibration and he can totally, Dad, I feel weird, but it's all in a good way, right? Because we're having quality time together. And again, science has something to say here, because we've talked about the vibrations and emanations of your heart
mm-hmm.
Field.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is probably just a vibrational synchronization with another human being. And so you have to capture those moments and recognize them and go, yeah, well, that's because it's our heart shield. It's your heart shield talking. And so then they start doing little experiments and having a framework. It's all about having a framework and a concept for them to have their own personal experience.
And what about in the terms of, like, let's say, protecting yourself, protecting your heart if you're in an environment where you don't feel comfortable or something like that? Because that's first how I thought about Heart Shield, that it's actually something that, that you know, makes sure that you maintain your own frequency, so to speak. And even we can even talk it about this from the point of view of, let's say, a spiritual connection to higher force or the planet or however people, you know, whatever relationship they have to the higher forces around us. Do you think that it can be wise at certain points in time to almost have a protective layer around yourself, that you can create your little bubble, almost, so to speak, to maintain or make sure that you're in that space all the time, although you're in an environment where you're kind of where you're uncertain or nervous or feel that stress that you mentioned before?
Yes, I think that's, I think science is coming closer and closer to just outright proving it. And I think it'll be, in that sense, it's still true. It's not just religious pseudoscience talk, but experientially, yes, it's like when you feel that anger and, or you feel that very natural instinct of fear, because it's being pumped out, and you want to draw on some courage, you know, maybe what, if you want to speak out or something, breathing is important in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so just to, you know, breathing really helps activate and exercise. And in that sense, it's no longer the language of shield. It's really the language of circuit. You know, making sure that all circuits are firing, even when you're scared or seriously pissed off.
Yeah.
You're consciously making an effort. And that's what that's why the shield is relevant, because it insinuates a superhuman power, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so people start to have living experiences of exercising or using those circuits. And trust me, I mean, I'm not a perfect person. I have teenagers. I get pissed.
Can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, or even in a marital fight, you know.
Yeah.
And the HeartMath, for example, has programs or success stories of such applications. You know, this is very true in real life across all sorts of situations where essentially you're hijacked. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
You go back into reptilian responses, and really, you are capable of still firing on all circuits even when you're hijacked. And so that's where it becomes experiential, and that's where it's new for most human beings, I think, in that we don't have that experience. Well, but, I mean, it's validated all across history. I mean, it takes a lot to get someone to take a gun and shoot people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's well known that you have to break down a human being in order to get them to pick up a gun and kill another person as a team.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about the reptilian kind of within us. We recognize that now, that we have this R-complex, the mammalian brain, and the limbic system and all this. And it's, although it is, obviously, as you said before, it is one thing, and we should think about it in one thing. But what we also can see is this: there is, to me at least, what I feel, there is a little bit of a schism inside ourselves. And do you think that the reptilian, so to speak, within us is another, almost as another being, another entity, if we become really upset or angry, or if we let this take control over us, it's almost like the conscious response, the awareness, kind of goes out the window. How do you view it at this point? Do you feel that it's another kind of being that we need to control consciously or try to hold down? Or is it still part of us and it's actually a good thing and it can serve us in a good way at certain times? Or how do you view all this?
Well, I view it in terms of, I guess, you know, spiritual messages, whether channeled or gained through insight in nature, or different methods of personal spiritual experience. I think the overall theme is that as we're evolving beings, and our brain is not something to, you know, try to overcome or think that it's separate. It served us well evolutionarily. I mean, it's absolutely essential as corporal beings that we had that response.
Yes.
And so it's all in terms of evolution, taking that next step. It's understanding and interacting and co-creating with a greater reality and shedding and evolving into something new as humans.
Really interesting. I want to ask you a bit here at the end of this hour here, if we begin to round things up, about, you know, you mentioned breathing, for instance, before, that that's just a good way to kind of get in contact with yourself again in one way. How about like simple relaxation methods or even meditation? Is that something that you, you know, encourage as well, or do you have any other tips for people who want to kind of I guess train this circuit, the heart brain circuit, even more?
Sure. I think I think there's many different ways, and even like someone describes a chair, everyone's going to have a different definition of a chair, or draw a different chair. So there's everyone's going to have a unique experience doing this. And as a marketer with my marketing hat on, it's my mission just to lay these concepts out. And I think people will develop all sorts of ways and methods like you talked about to experience that. But they won't do it. They won't experience it unless they have the model. And so the risk is people claiming the benefits of say, meditation for something other than it is, or something that is only for fruity people, you know, hippies or yoga people.
Right.
Well, no, this is something that everyone's capable. And so in that sense, I'm more in a sense of putting the concepts out there and trying to unify that divide that we observe, whether it's purposeful or not. You know, some of it's going to be inherent and evolutionary. Some of it's clearly on purpose. To answer your question, you know, I think it's all good, but it is for everyone. And so laying out the most broadest concepts, you know, for all ages and all different thoughts,
yes,
on worldviews is essential.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah. So where will we be, you know, by 2012? I don't know.
if we're alive, we'll get to see. Get to see it. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, in, you know, mentioning that year, I think that hints on that transformation. I don't give any credit to the doomsday scenario.
Me neither.
Certainly that that's possible. We live in a free will universe, and if someone wants to press the button, I guess they can. But you know, I think that's in that sense, it's cosmic insanity to do such a thing.
Yeah, exactly.
The reality is just understanding who we are in the sense.
Absolutely, and an awakening process can be a little bit painful in many cases, but it's, as you said, I think it's a good thing at the end of the day. And if people can, you know, have the right kind of relationship, if you will, to the information or to the experiences, then it's something that will contribute for us to learn and grow and evolve pretty much and become, you know, better human beings or more or whatever. But I think this is a good time, Dominic, here to begin to round things up here for this time. I think it was a really, really interesting program. I want to thank you for coming on and talking about your ideas. Definitely food for thought and worth consideration. Maybe you can mess a little bit about what's kind of next for you. What do you see in regards to the website? Do you hope it'll continue to grow, or are you going to go in a different direction? What's up next for you here?
Well, yes, I've mentioned to you, when I first mentioned to you about HeartBrain, in my origin story about the company, I guess, it was related to this thing related to co-creation. And so with the heart fields and the heart circuits, there's this new concept of transmission reception. You know, your mind as a receiver, broadcast mechanism, and certainly that relates to the heart now. So when we talk about you know, spiritual communications or spiritual insights, that process of co-creation has to do with transmission reception, and so it becomes this personal journey, collective journey, about you know, who are we co-creating with? Is, you know, is who are we in the universe? And so in that effect, I am networking and trying to reach out to people doing the channeling, doing the TRing, which stands for transmission reception. In that sense, I'm developing a, you know, this qualitative database of messages. And it's fun, you know, in that sense, it's entertaining, you know, because it's a wild genre of information.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's very fun for the truth seeker. And, so that's where it's going.
Interesting. Well, let's definitely keep an eye on the website. Again, it's heartbrain.net. And thank you very much for coming on, Dominic. I hope to have you back again soon, and we can talk more when you've continued to develop this theory and see where things are going, okay?
Yes, thank you very much, Henry.
Thank you. That's our program with Dominic Orbeck. We are going to be back on Thursday with more radio for you. We have Catherine Austin Fitz coming up later in the month on the swine flu issue, vaccination and the economy. We have Philip Villan with us on the murder of Roberto Calvi and the Vatican. Anthony from We Are Change Ireland are going to join us with much more important information about the upcoming Lisbon Treaty. We also have Rand Flemouth, Bob Dean, MEP Marta Andreasen joining us. The full schedule can be found in our members area. Thank you for listening to Red Ice Radio, and thank you for subscribing, for keeping your ears and eyes open, and for making sure we can continue to bring you interesting, important, mind- and heart-opening material. My name is Henrik. I want to thank Fredrik and Elizabeth for their hard work. Take good care, and we'll be back before you know it.